It's time to speak out on the original Speak Out radio show. Speak Out is a public affairs program that serves you, our listeners, and the community you live in. Speak Out is all about listener participation. So call in anytime during the show. 928-854-5687. That's 854-5687. Speak Out on KNTR Talk is heard on 106.7, 5, and 3. You can also listen at KNTRTalk.com and listen anywhere through the TuneIn radio app. From elected officials, community leaders, small business owners, school district representatives, and charitable causes, Speak Out is here for you on KNTR Talk. It's time to introduce you to the host of Speak Out. When Norm was out on the casting call, who did Cheers turn to?
The police!
When Mike Tyson became the youngest heavyweight champion in history and no sparring partners could be found, who did the champ turn to?
The police!
Now, this world-renowned barfly slash pugilist has settled behind the microphone once again for your benefit. Ladies and gentlemen, the one and only...
He's only mortal, folks.
Paul LaVoy!
His pronouns are he, him, and hungry. Really?
Captain Radio here, inviting you to another episode of the Havasu Pioneers Radio Show.
All right, welcome to Speak Out. It's a new month, a new Havasu Pioneers radio show, and our old guest. I don't mean that in a bad way, by the way. But it's 40. It's show number 48, 47.
48?
Yeah, you're
okay.
On.
Okay.
You're on.
Yeah,
you just
48.
Need to probably adjust your volume down there.
Right.
And then you're good to go.
Yep.
So Dan always likes to interview guests before the interview.
Yes.
So he doesn't get to do all the technical prep work.
That's
so
right. Well, that's just your job, Paul.
On your headset, it's not. Anyway, welcome to the show, everybody. It's Wednesday, July 5th, of course, the first Wednesday of the month. Means the Havasu Pioneers Radio Show, and it's the first show of July for us. I don't know if you knew that, Dan, but...
Yes.
Did you go? You saw fireworks last night?
I did.
From a clandestine location.
Yes, that's actually correct.
I know it is.
It is a hidden secret location that we
right.
do not share, and I've been going there for many years.
Yeah, no worries. You have a very special guest today and insights into a camp that's also pretty clandestine.
It is. You know, it's a location that I've been familiar with since I was in high school. I had the privilege of knowing a couple of the residents that lived there during those years in the mid-70s. And it's a location that a lot of people don't know exist. And that includes people that grew up here, that are pioneers. A lot of people have never heard the city or the town, I should say, the camp, Gene Camp.
Mm-hmm.
And Gene Camp is such a critical part of the entire aqueduct system and the Metropolitan Water District. It's got such an amazing history, and it's right down the road, and hardly anybody knows it's there.
It's so amazing. Dan told me this earlier or yesterday. Not sure what we could talk about. That's how amazing it is.
That's a very good point. And you know, our guest speaker today is Deanna Dockery Beaver, and she was a resident there for many years, and so she's going to be able to share some things and not some things.
Some things, but not others.
Exactly.
So
it's a very integral part of our water system that supplies California. And because of that, there's some topics that we simply can't talk about, which makes it even more interesting. But we are going to talk a little bit about the history of Gene Camp. And we're going to talk to Deanna about what life was like living there, you know, in Gene Camp in the day. So for those of you who are not familiar with Gene Camp, it is just above Parker Dam. When you go across the dam and starting turning left, going down the California side, you're turning right and you're going up to the top of the mountain. There you will find a community, if you will, a self-contained community back in the day, where all its residents basically worked on the aqueduct, the pumping station, and made sure that the water flowed 24/7, which also meant there were jobs that included different shifts all day.
Mm-hmm.
The whole Metropolitan Water District started back in 1928 when it was formed between several cities. And so they started building the aqueduct back in 1933, which I found fascinating. And at one point, it employed over 35,600 employees to work on this thing. And it stretches out for 242 miles. So it was an amazing undertaking back then. And of course, all this was taking place during the Depression. So it made it even more of a monumental feat, if you will. It was right up there with Hoover Dam, but very few people knew about it. From there, it had its origins, here in, on the Colorado River, and Gene Camp was, put into action and built back in the 30s, and that's when people started showing up. Tunnels were being drilled, and the pipelines were being set to pump water up out of the Colorado River. One particular tunnel that was 13 miles long, took over 5 years to tunnel through.
Wow.
So it was quite a feat. So, here we are, and we look at the pumping station downriver, down by Parker Dam, and we see it. But a lot of people don't really understand a lot about that. Mm-hmm. They see it. They don't know where the water goes from there. They do know it makes it to California. Do we know how many gallons are pumped a minute or anything like that?
Oh, goodness. No.
Okay.
I
meant to look that up earlier, and I didn't do it. But so for today's purposes, I want to thank you so much for being here, Deanna.
Well, thank you for the invitation.
And maybe you can walk us through from, the early years and what you know about Gene Camp that you can share with us.
Based on my knowledge, which is limited in those early years, you're talking about 28. I wasn't even a sparkle in anybody's eye yet. My family moved there in 1952 and were there through 1979. So that would be what I consider to be the heyday of Metropolitan Water District. Likewise, we were talking about the Murphy kids. A shout out to all of my fellow MWD Met brats.
You know what I mean. Absolutely. You got Rick Murphy, you got Julie Murphy, you got Cindy Murphy, and you got Jerry.
And David, their brother David, that's just a few.
Right.
We all are still somewhat loosely connected. I'm sure if we needed to get in touch with somebody, we could from even all the others. I still stay in contact with my girlfriends that were, kind of in my circle when I went through school. And, the guys all seem to still stay in contact with each other. But when we came, it was pretty much already in place. The construction had already happened. And by the time my dad, came to work there post World War II. So Met hired a lot of,
vets.
Coming out of the service and, highly skilled, highly talented individuals and had extremely strong work ethic. And so, at that time, it was already starting kind of the maintenance of the camp. Now, in the case of my mother, she was the first woman to be hired in the field, and it was because she had a civil service rating, and she had worked in the Phoenix area as a court reporter. And in fact, that's a whole nother story, but she was very proficient at what she did, and when they had the prisoners of war, the Germans that, and they had those trials to try and get at the root of what caused them to break out. Mm-hmm. She was a court reporter, and it took four other individuals to translate her handwritten shorthand notes. That was one thing she always said, was she said, I was never the one that translated my own notes. So she says, I never know if it was exactly. But that's another story, another time. But she had other work under her belt by the time they hired her at Met. And she also worked, there was a Justice Court at Parker Dam, and she also worked for the court there.
Seems like, Dan, there's a theme here of military, and I'm not going to say secrecy, but security involved. Was that common then to hire people that you knew could keep a secret?
I don't know. I can say that even when I, a number of years ago, when I was able to interview my mom, and it had to do with when she was doing the court reporting and that kind of stuff, she was just really hesitant. And I said, you know, Mom, they've released all of that stuff. Now it's okay to talk about it. But I think most individuals, and I think even from the standpoint of us as kids that grew up there, were protective of it. We had a wonderful childhood. I'm not saying our personal home lives were always perfect, because like anything else, you know, you're dealing with, you know, maybe alcoholism in one family and, you know, different types of things. And so, but generally speaking, our childhood, we didn't even realize how wonderful it was.
Wow. Now, how many people do you think were living in the camp at that time?
Oh, goodness.
I mean, were we talking a few hundred, or?
I would say, you know, probably if you look at each family, maybe had three children. Maybe some had five. Some had one or two. I should have been on point and done that in my mind, but we had a number of, I know when I graduated from eighth grade, there were 21 kids in my eighth grade graduation class at Parker Dam.
Wow. There you go.
Wow.
And then carve that down and you're up at Gene Camp.
Can you say where the, just so I can get a bearing, where the camp was in relation to the pumping station or not?
It's all part of it.
Oh, it is?
Now, I don't know if you're talking about the Parker Dam, if you're talking about intake, talking about the...
Intake. We're talking about where the straws are, right?
Yeah, intake. Yeah. Yes.
Intake is separated from the camp. There was a little community right there of the people that worked at the intake plant.
Okay.
But it was separated by probably, I'm guessing, 2 miles, you know.
Okay.
Round a mountain, and you know,
right, and then it goes up on top where
the main
is. And so when you're on top, there's the community up the pumping station.
I got you.
There's the big reservoir, there's a Gene reservoir up there.
The kind of the first one, and that's up there.
What a cool way to grow up.
Oh, it was.
And you had the lake right there.
It was.
Well, they had their own. When we say reservoir, it's huge.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's big.
So no need to have a swimming pool in your backyard.
Well, this self-contained community, Matt didn't skimp on anything. I think people from the outside would have thought we were spoiled. I mean, when we were kids, there was even talk, a little Peyton Place. So anybody that grew up during that time period would know Peyton Place was a television program.
Right.
Where there was family mischief going on.
You know, sure.
With multiple families. So, but, you know, it was wonderful. We had a swimming pool. We had swim instructors. There were individuals that lived there that moved out from California, their spouses were the ones that taught it. We had a doctor there that was on staff. I mean, you know, when I got my ears pierced, that's who I went to. He did it all.
That must have been interesting.
You know, they had a mess hall. The cooks that they had there were phenomenal. later on, I was able to go back and have a one of their sack lunches. You would want to have their sack lunch.
Right.
And they had also a lodging for, you know, when workers would come from other locations to do a specific job, they would stay there. Met did go through a period of time. I don't know. I can't speak to anything recent, but they did have a period of time where they would bring bus loads of international leaders there to show them, and I think it was to kind of encourage them in their own countries to do something similar.
I actually just saw a post, and it was from 2015, where this particular individual had asked Met if he could be part of the tour group, and apparently they were allowing individuals to come experience the different locations along the aqueduct and learn more about it. And the guys, the food was amazing, and they talked about everything you're sharing with us. And I thought, wow, I wish I could have got in on that when that was still happening. So I'm guessing it may not be occurring today. But
and I, like I said, I don't know. But it was just, I mean, back to the reservoir, no, that was off limits for the kids.
Oh.
It was something where if you got caught fishing over there, like, generally, it was the boys that would want to go fishing. We were always told it was grounds for your parents to be fired. So we were always conscious of what we did as children might come back on our parents. And so, you know, we kind of towed the line.
fear reached all the way to Havasu, knowing that general story, that the one thing you don't do is go up there, and I heard the fish bite on a bear hook, but you can't get caught fishing up there. It's like you disappear.
Right.
So we're going to take a break?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
We're going to kind of keep it with a spy theme today.
Oh, very cool.
If you want to. So,
yeah.
I thought I had the Get Smart theme here. We'll see where this goes. Anyway, we're talking to Deanna Beaver. She is giving us some insights into Gene Camp and the Metropolitan Water District and what
That's
it
right.
was like to grow up there.
Very cool.
There it is. Just kicked in. That's Lalo Schifrin, by the way. Very famous composer in the day. You talk about Peyton Place. That was like the Desperate Housewives of their day, right?
Yes, it was.
All right. Back with more in a moment. I'm Paul Lavoie. It's the Havasu Pioneers radio show with host Dan DeLaSantos. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Havasu Pioneers radio show. I'm Paul Lavoie, the host of Speak Out, along with Dan DeLaSantos, our host, of course, for the Havasu Pioneers radio show, brought to you in part by Mercury Air Conditioning and Heating, also Mojave Mortgage, Bradley Chevrolet and Bradley Ford, GDK LLC, by Springberg Wealth Management, Patio Paradise, Les Olson IT, your company's one source for office technology at lesolson.com/Kingman, and by The Chair, Havasu-style dining and great music with live entertainment in a flip-flop atmosphere overlooking the London Bridge. It's The Chair. And we do have Diamondbacks tickets for this weekend against the Pittsburgh Pirates. That's this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Friday's a night game. Saturday and Sunday are afternoon games that start at 1 o'clock. And then you have the All-Star break that starts on Monday. So give me a call during the next break or the last break of the hour, 854-KNTR-928-854-5687, if you want tickets to see the Diamondbacks. Go ahead, Dan.
Well, that was a quite a bit you got out there.
It was
great. So we're here with Deanna Beaver, and she was a previous resident of Gene Camp, which is part of the Metropolitan Water District of Southern California. For those of you who do not know what the aqueduct supports, it supports over 5,200 square miles of California. So it's not a drop in the bucket. When you're eating tomatoes in Minnesota in February, you might wonder where it's coming from. And it just so happens the water here in on the Colorado River is supplying the growth of those vegetables and getting them shipped to 48 states.
Wow.
So, Deanna, you know, you were sharing with us what it was like growing up there. And I was listening about the food, you know, and the doctors and the pools and how they spared no expense. You know, a lot of us didn't have that. And I get that, the importance of keeping everybody happy there on top of the mountain. And, You know, it sounded like there was kind of a big wave of its strength in numbers, and then it started diminishing a little bit. So it started going to an automated aspect, didn't it?
Well, I would say that probably when the change happened with the close-knit community of Met was partly due to automation, and then when people, like Havasu City, when it was fully built, it was close in proximity, and people could buy their own home, and prices back then when Havasu was first built or established, the prices were fairly reasonable, and I mean, heck, you had a lake up here.
right.
So people would buy homes and they would relocate to Lake Havasu City. And so a lot of the homes that were needed there were no longer needed. And because of the automation of the plants, and it's not just that one was automated, but so was Parker Dam was automated. Intake was automated, and I'm sure if you go through the whole line all the way up to Wyoming, where you know, the snow melt off starts and dam construction started, that they're all automated. You know,
sure.
I mean, heck, we're dealing with that now. You go to a restaurant and you get a kiosk. You go to Walmart, you know,
right.
So. You know, automation, it changes the dynamics of things.
It does, and I hate to say it, it takes away the personal aspect of it. It's the feature that we lose. But I know that there was probably a safety issue there as well, so reducing the safety risks, I imagine, was part of that decision-making process. Mm-hmm. So, you know, with that in mind, you know, and we talk about the importance of the water, making its way all the way to California, Southern California, I should say. Did you ever communicate with any of the other camps along the way?
Oh yes. As kids, it was limited unless we had family at one of the other plants, and sometimes, you know, you'd go visit with them for a week or two in the summertime, you know, at one of the other pump stations. But, the individuals that worked at Met or along the line all the way to Los Angeles, they would have specialized skills. And so depending, sometimes they would be at Met, sometimes somebody that lived at Met would be at Iron Mountain, somebody at Iron Mountain would, you know, they go to Eagle. They moved around depending on what was needed at a particular time. My dad, what his service was when he worked for Met was he was a maintenance mechanic on the big pipes.
Okay.
And so once a year they would do a thorough. They would go through, I mean, check everything, and they would work around the clock when they were doing those kind of shift work like that. To make sure everything was tight like it was supposed to be. There was no cracks. There was no, you know, everything was clean. I mean, it was just, you know, it was a smooth running machine is what I would say.
And, you know, all the years that I've known about the aqueduct and the pumping stations, which includes locations like Eagle Mountain, and a big shout out to Ruben if you're listening. I spent 4th of July with him. He grew up in Eagle Mountain, and their community had the similar stories, of course. But I'd never heard of any tragedies or meaning a catastrophe where a pipe had broken or some unusual scenario had occurred. I mean, am I missing something, or has it been?
Well, with regard to the overall aspect of the equipment, there was tragedies. In fact, since we're speaking about the Murphy family, they're third generation. The kids are, their grandfather would work there, but he was electrocuted.
Oh, wow.
And,
wow.
You know, there was, it seemed like some of the times there was another gentleman, his wife was one of our swim instructors. He was, they were working in one of those closed-in buildings, and it exploded and caught fire, and so, you know, his life was tragically lost. So there's, you know, Vietnam War was going on in the 60s, so, you know, you'd have somebody in the community that, you know, Parker Dam, we had someone that had lost their life. And so, and in fact, the Murphy family, again, I mean, they've worked for everything they ever got, I guarantee you. But they had an uncle that was killed in Vietnam. So, you know, yeah, there have been lots of struggles, but I think the community as a whole always worked together. Families individually, they worked together and pulled themselves up and kept on keeping on, you know.
Well, and you know, when we talk about the being proud, of course, of being part of that whole system, and as well as the tragedies that it took to accomplish it, it's still considered one of the wonders of the world, which I thought was fascinating when I was doing some research and reading, because of the undertaking it took to build this thing. I mean, taking water across
the entire state
to get where it needed to be. You know, you mentioned the residents purchasing homes in Lake Havasu. It just dawned on me, you couldn't own a home in Gene Camp, could you?
No. It was a company community.
Right.
And... Again, I can only compare it to modern day, probably, is still mining communities like Baghdad, Morenci, you know, where the real estate is actually owned by the company, and so they kind of control it. And so, but they always took care of us. I don't know if you ever noticed, you're out in a farming community, usually there's a really big, nice house. Well, when a farmer's going to have his wife out there, he's going to give her something nice to make her want to stay there. So Met always took care of its employees. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
That's funny.
Well, we're going to take one more break. We're here with Deanna Beaver, previous resident of Gene Camp, part of the Metropolitan Water District, and we'll be right back.
Absolutely. All right, the Havasu Pioneers Radio Show, brought to you in part by Mercury Air Conditioning and Heating. Boy, if you haven't serviced air conditioner, you might want to get on that now. Call Mercury Air Conditioning and Heating today. All right, I'm Paul Lavoie. Speak Out will continue. Again, give me a call if you want those Diamondbacks tickets for this weekend. I've got a family four-pack for either Friday, Saturday, or Sunday against the Pittsburgh Pirates. The first place Diamondbacks, by the way.
Well, the pretty faces that you find, a pretty face can hide an evil
The infamous Henry Mancini. Gotta love that one, Dan.
Yes.
All right, a little theme from the Pink Panther. And Speak Out brought to you in part by Arizona Financial Credit Union, also Mojave Community College, SunPower by Esme Electric, SamsGuns.com, the Lewis Team, Remax by the Lake with team leader Bobby Lewis and Julie Lewis, also Dorita's Place, providing Havasu with all-natural dog and cat food along with pet toys since 2006, also featuring self-service doggy washes, and Salmon's Air Conditioning, serving the tri-state area for over 52 years. Ask about Salmon's superior maintenance plan. And by the way, if you want to participate on today's show, the Havasu Pioneers Radio Show, same number as I gave out for the Diamondbacks tickets, 928-854-5687. And speaking of which, we do have a caller on the line. Caller, you're live on the Havasu Pioneers Radio Show.
Yeah, good morning, everybody. That sounds a fascinating place. Wow, that just sounds great. I wish I could have been through that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
What is there now, if anything?
Well, the camp and some of the houses are still there. Back to my husband, he was telling me, man, if you go on Google earth. He says it's phenomenal because it tells you, you know, if my house is still there, which our house still is, but some of the dynamics of the way it used to look aren't the same anymore. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it's not exactly the same as it used to be because they don't have the need for the housing anymore. So now they probably, and again, I'm not in the current in circle up there at Met, and just like everyone else, I'm going to have to show my driver's license, my social security card, probably give blood and everything else to get in up there. Because they do protect it. That water that comes out of that lake is taking care of a lot of people in California. And so with that in mind, you know, everybody's always having to be on their toes. Not only that, but now we've got the CAP that goes into Arizona.
Sure.
And takes care of all the way down to Tucson. So we have
the housing has been abandoned?
No, it's not abandoned. Usually they will, raise a home is the term I used to always hear, demolition a home.
Okay.
Remove it as opposed to just leaving something abandoned up there. Nothing ever gets to the point where it's deteriorated.
Boy, go ahead, Jack.
Is that the only thing up in that area? I mean, can you drive up there, public drive up there, or no?
Well, where the public can drive, if you're wanting to drive on the peripheral of it, you can drive all the way to Black Meadow Landing, and I think Black Meadow Landing actually maybe still has a restaurant. I don't know. It's been my brother back in the 60s was a busser
up there, I think.
So.
Yes, it does. Okay.
But Black Meadow Landing is still a full operational river
community, yeah.
Or lake, I guess, lake community up there, you know, with mobile homes and people that probably winter up there.
Yeah, some people have been up there as long as I've been here, since before the bridge. Deanna,
Jack, did you have another question?
Yep. No, I'm all done. Thanks, Paul.
Hey, you're welcome.
Hey, Jack, thanks for calling in.
You bet.
All right. He's going to go exploring me, thanks. There you go.
So, you know, we talked a little bit about, what it was like growing up. Now, something we touched on was the reservoir. Now, you're not supposed to fish up there. And maybe you can help bring that, bring a little storyline to that.
Well, with regard to the reservoir and anything where it's the water that actually is involved in the
transfer?
Servicing uh-huh. California.
Sure.
I think there's always wanting to make sure that the water is, you know, in a good state. You were speaking about the waterfall and
little
pool and that. And back in the 60s, we actually had real Hell's Angels that came out here back in the 60s. And we also, that little area right there between the hippies, and these were the bona fide hippies, the hippie wagons and the Cheech and Chong thing. That's for real back then. And, they were there. But then also in the 60s, I think it was 1964, we had desert training going on here. The military came out of 29 Palms, mm-hmm. and they did training for a number of months over here. And so a lot of the high school girls ended up marrying...
The boys. Well,
So that was something that went on. But that waterfall in there, we had always been told. Again, I think they used to put a lot of fear in us kids growing up there. So I don't ever know if it was or wasn't. But there's a few of those areas where there's those pools of water and maybe a little bit of a waterfall. And, and I went back there and went swimming too. But they always told us, no, you have to see out of that water. That's overflow sewage water or something like that.
Right.
And it was treated water, so you have to stay away from it. So I don't know. I don't ever know of any kids getting sick from being around
it. I never did.
You know, Dan, I'm thinking the water quality there was pretty dang good.
Actually,
especially in the days of drinking out of the hose.
It was. It was filtering.
Oh, we all drank out of the hose.
Oh, yeah. So did we. Absolutely.
It was filtering through the rocks. It was runoff from the reservoir. And it, by the way, the waterfall is not at Gene Camp, just to be clear. It's actually between the dam and Gene Camp. But I can't tell you where it's at because it's absolutely illegal to go there.
Huh?
But back in the day, it was really that really amazing little oasis where there was palm trees, this amazing waterfall, and a pond. And you might take your girlfriend back there to show her how well the water flowed.
A submarine race, right?
Nice. I like both of those. That was good.
So back in the day, they would do once a year. You mentioned that they had a relationship with Fish and Game and where they would have, would be considered a fish fry, or what was that?
Anyway, I'm not sure if that's just another element I probably need to look into again, but I don't know if it was the U.S. Fish and Game. It's Arizona Fish and Game, I think, was involved in it. But they worked together with MWD. MWD had employees that were interested in fishing. Some of them still to this day are involved in the Take a Kid Fishing, which is a wonderful program that is still it's still active after, you were saying, 40-some years. Walter Schantz was really involved in that over time. We had a number of other individuals now that have stepped in as some of those first individuals that started it have kind of retired from it. Some of their kids have moved into the slot now and are maybe taking over the adult leadership to teach these kids how to fish. But they all kind of work harmoniously together. You know, if it's like they're needing to maybe have more fish in the river, they might put the smaller fish in the reservoir to
and let grow,
it grow
them. Okay, right.
And then they'll go in there. It's a controlled situation. They'll let some of these fishermen go in there.
Right.
Fish them out, and then they'll relocate them to the lake or the river or wherever it is that they're going to do that.
I know they had a once a year event, and maybe not so much anymore, but it was the thing where the public could be there, which I thought was fascinating, and I never got to go, but I'd heard about it.
Well, that may have been, that would have kind of been after I would have probably moved on and...
Sure.
You know.
What's your most memorable thing you can remember growing up there?
Oh, the old swimming hole.
Okay.
I think I sent you a picture of it.
Okay.
Anybody that grew up at Matt, the old swimming hole was the place.
So this is besides the reservoir. There was an old swimming hole?
Yeah, and it was specifically built. I mean, there's, the horseshoe, for those that wanted to play horseshoe, they had it set up. There were picnic tables. Well, it's still there, and if you're lucky enough to go there, you can,
So
you can go there and experience today, but that's a place. All you have to do is show one image, and anybody who grew up there, I guarantee you would say that's Old Swimming Hole.
Fantastic!
They
that's
all know
really
that.
Neat.
But we had someone. He was a little bit older than I was in school, but he grew up down at Intake, and he went on to become big in the fishing.
Oh, wow.
He grew up on the lake where he was around the fishing and all that.
So one term that you used, which I thought was interesting, you called yourself a Met Brat. So tell us what a Met Brat is.
Well, I think what happened was those of us that grew up there had this special life that we lived. We didn't even realize it at the time. It was just what, but Met took care of our homes. If you needed a new refrigerator, you didn't have to go buy a new refrigerator.
Sure.
Met would just see that you had your new refrigerator, your new oven, you need cement for a patio in the back. Met took care of its people up there. And I don't even think, like I said, that we realized it. But people from the outside that we associated with just always thought we were kind of spoiled brats. And so we just embraced, we're Met brats.
Right.
You know, and we all knew that we grew up there that way.
That's fascinating.
So you talked about the commissary earlier, right? Was that like a dining hall?
Yes.
Did you always eat there, or did you have a grocery store that your parents could go to,
no.
Or how did that work?
Well, we are so interconnected, even like Havasu City, really, even though it was later. Mm-hmm. But we're interconnected with that, Intake, Gene Camp, mm-hmm. Or Gene Village, whichever you want to call it, Parker Dam. Parker Dam and Met were kind of, we went to school at Parker Dam. The bus would pick us up at Met and bring us down the hill. All of the dads every year made everything special at our school. If we were going to have a Halloween carnival, we had the best Halloween carnival. They made booze. The dads all got involved, and we just had the best of everything because everybody just worked together like a bunch of busy bees, you know.
It's a corporate utopia, Dan.
I know. She was talking about how the dads made booths, and I go, folks, she said booths, not booths.
They weren't bootleggers. Exactly.
Booths, Halloween booths. There was a cakewalk and the moms that made the cakes and, you know, and so it was just a...
But I guess my question was, how did that work with the grocery shopping? They went into Parker?
At Parker Dam, which mm-hmm. that was... Parker Dam was actually Bureau of Reclamation. But at a point in time... MWD, because they needed more housing and the Bureau didn't need as much housing, they leased half of that Parker Dam Village to Met. And so one end of it was Met and the other end of it was Bureau of Reclamation employees.
Right. Yeah, they had Coast Guard Auxiliary, or the Coast Guard was down there in force. We didn't have sheriff. We didn't have police. We had the Coast Guard on the water. Back in the day, both on the river and the lake.
Yeah. All through the 60s.
So they shut down the entire system back in 2003, the aqueduct, and completely refurbished the thing so it would last another 75 years. So it's an era gone by where all the people that you've been sharing with us had their hand in keeping that alive and making it work. We've gone to a little bit of an automated system, and I guess... You know, as we get ready to finish up with our show, you know, when we talk about the district, you know, how important do you feel it was to everybody to have that there?
For us that grew up there, it was just a special place and a special time. I don't know that it would be something that you could go back to.
Right.
We've all stayed close in terms of, I think we could pick up one lady said one time, you know, it doesn't matter how far apart we are. When we get back together, it's like you can pick up in a conversation where you left off.
Wow.
And it could have been years.
Right. Right.
You know, that was Sue Daly, by the way, for those that know Sue.
Well, we've been talking with Deanna Beaver, and Deanna, thank you so much for being here today. Definitely an enlightening story about Gene Camp.
Right.
And I hope everyone enjoyed it. And so, you know, we'll talk in a second about when our next show is.
If you missed any part of the show, just go to KNTRtalk.com. Look for the Havasu Pioneers Radio Show link. And this one is episode number 47. Coming up on 50, Dan.
Man.
Pretty cool. Pretty cool stuff. Great to have you on, Deanna.
Thank you.
And nice to meet you. And yeah, I learned something today for sure.
And our next show is going to be on Wednesday, August 2nd.
Oh, perfect. All right. Back with more in a moment. I'm Paul Lavoie. Stay with us on Speak Out.
Thank you.
you go. A little James Bond theme for you, Dan.
Man, you got to love James Bond.
Show number 47. That means in October we'll be on number 50. How appropriate is that?
It's going to be. We're having a party.
Yeah, no kidding. The same month as London Bridge Days, of course. All right. The next show is August 2nd.
Yeah, it's going to be August 2nd. You know, our topic today, of course, was about Gene Camp Metro Water District. What a lot of people don't know is that our lake is high all year round because of Met and because of Gene Camp. It's not a recreational lake. It's a safety valve lake to keep it high so that Gene Camp can pump water to California. And that is the rest of the story.
I gotcha. All right, on tomorrow's show, we'll have Brian Springberg, but only for half the show. We're going to have the ASU professor who is facing disciplinary charges because she wanted to bring Dennis Prager and Charlie Kirk to the campus. That's going to be a great interview in the first half of tomorrow's show. All right, until tomorrow, I'm Paul Lavoie, living the dream in Lake Havasu City. We'll see you tomorrow on Speak Out.
This is KNTR Talk, KGJJ HD2 Laughlin. Heard on 106.7 FM, 106.5, and 106.3. The voice of the free.